So we should be live now. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning if you're listening to this, or good afternoon. This is Radio Edutalk, which is the live version of Edutalk. That's a collaborative, open-to-anyone podcast outfit talking about education. I'm John Johnson. I'm sitting at home in Glasgow here. I'm joined, as usual, by David Noble. And I think he's still at work, actually, over in Hillside School. And today we're lucky enough to be joined by Sandra Nicole, who's going to be talking about MIE, Moving Image Education. If you are listening live, you can get in touch with the show by emailing edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, and that's E-D-U-T-A-L-K-R, or by just using the hashtag edutalk, E-D-U-T-A-L-K, on Twitter. If you've got any questions or anything you want to say to Sandra, feel free to send them in. I'm going to just ask Sandra maybe to introduce herself, give her a wee bit of background information on herself before we actually move on to what is Moving Image Education. Sandra.
Thank you, John, and thank you very much for inviting me to talk this evening or afternoon or morning, wherever you happen to be. As John said, my name's Sandra Nicole. I'm the Programme Director for Chartered Teacher at the University of Aberdeen, and I've been doing that for about 4 years now. I've been a teaching fellow at the university for about six. My background is in primary education. I'm a classroom practitioner. And became a chartered teacher in 2005, and then moved into the university sector, first in a secondment and became permanent 4 or 5 years ago. So it's given me an opportunity to explore lots of different ideas, and the latest exploration has been, as John mentioned, Moving Image Education. And that really emerged from an opportunity where the University of Glasgow had been doing quite a lot of work with their master's level students on examining moving image education, and it was a module that they had in their chartered teacher programme. And they approached us a wee while ago and asked if we would be interested in having some students on the postgraduate chartered teacher programme here in Aberdeen looking at moving image education. So we put together a module that was ready to run, and unfortunately we came to the stage where the government were rethinking chartered teacher, and I'm sure you've heard information about that from David Noble. So at the moment we have a module at postgraduate level ready to run, which hasn't actually run yet, which is a bit of a disappointment at the moment. However, because I had become really quite interested in the impact that moving image is beginning to make throughout education, I took the opportunity to speak to some of my colleagues here in the university, and we decided that we'd put this Moving Image Education module and change it slightly and make it an undergrad module, but it's for the postgraduate certificate in education. That's those people who've got a degree already but come to the university to undertake a year's education in becoming a classroom practitioner, either primary or secondary. And they get to have what we call an elective. They get to choose some subjects, and what they've chosen, one of the options we offered them was moving image education. And I've just completed delivering that for its first year as a pilot scheme, and it has been very well received. I also lecture about moving image education to second years who are on the four-year course, and also as part of the literacy team for the final year for the four-year course as well. And I've also lectured in the postgraduate year and in the joint honours. So we're beginning to spread the news. So that's telling you what I've done with moving image education. But what is moving image education? Well, it's an area that's being seen as much an increasingly important element of literacy that's being explored within the classroom context. And really because a lot of our pupils and young people bring a huge amount of knowledge about moving image, but very little understanding. And to a certain extent, we as adults don't really analyse what we're seeing on a regular basis, and perhaps we should consider doing that in a much more rigorous way. Really, this has come to the fore, I think, because literacy is now embedded clearly in our approach to education in Scotland in Curriculum for Excellence, and it's fundamental that teachers have a high level of their own personal literacy, and that relates to points that was made by the Donaldson Report in 2011, that literacy impacts upon teachers, pupils and all human beings really, within the Western world certainly, in quite a strong way, and that with the moving of technology in the 21st century, we as human beings have been continuously bombarded with a lot of moving images coming from a variety of sources, and really we need to think a bit more constructively about what moving image is, what it says, and how it says it, and how that has an impact on our daily lives, both within a social context and within an educational one. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with the students was to really consider how we can investigate moving image in a way that would allow them to think about it from their own perspective, adults, and also from the point of view of where they are as teachers and thinking about the moving images that children and people are seeing in schools. And also it's a very valuable tool for teaching because you can use it in a variety of ways. You can use it to exemplify something that you're teaching. You can use it as a stimulus for discussion or for a prompt for an area that you want to research. You can use it as a culminating piece where you pull lots of ideas together. You can look at film analysis where you're beginning to think about why a director might be using certain shots or certain types of dialogue or certain types of dress. Or certain types of perspective. Is it to do with persuading people to take a particular approach, or where it's informative, or where it's looking at examining social context, human emotion, and all sorts of areas. And so it's a valuable opportunity for us as teachers to think about documenting and celebrating the life and ethos that surrounds us both socially and within our schools. And particularly building the Curriculum 5 can help support that, where we can think about how we assess people's engagement with moving image, both formatively and summatively. And it's up to teachers to think of creative ways in which we can use the knowledge and understanding that a lot of our young people already have, but are perhaps not questioning as strongly as they should be. So there has been quite a bit of research beginning to appear now. One of the most major ones was the Brechin Project, which started off in 2004, where Scottish Executive commissioned the Faculty of Education in Glasgow under the leadership of Eric Wilson to have a look at the evaluation of a project in moving image that was being run in Angus. And it was quite a longitudinal study. It lasted to September 2008. And the final report is available for publication. And if you Google Brechin Project, Moving Image Education, you'll get through to seeing the report. But it's quite a distinctive one because of the length of time that was involved. And people like George Head from Glasgow, Fran Payne, one of our researchers from Aberdeen, and John Lanson from Stirling have been key in trying to pull some of the aspects of the report into the work that is still continuing to go on. And I spoke to George recently, who said they're still doing quite a bit of work on this. And so keep an eye out for anything that George Head is producing on moving image if you're interested in looking at it from a more theoretical point of view. And I think one of the things that we need to think about is the aims of such a project. It was looking at that transition between 5 to 14 and Curriculum for Excellence, how moving image could have more impact, how it involved ICT, teams of people, how Angus Digital Media Centre could help with the ICT aspects and so on. And basically the conclusions that came out of it was that certainly teachers in primary schools responded very positively to the kind of things they could do with Move Image, although there was some caution with regard to the technical skills. That lead practitioners who were beginning to embed moving image education into their own practice were very central to informing others about how it could be used and how creative it could be, and how it was a more interesting approach, pedagogical approach, for the teaching and learning of quite traditional literacy skills, and that children basically loved it. And to a certain extent that was echoed in the further professional studies that I carried out with my postgraduate students, where both primary and secondary teachers, students said that it was very well received in classrooms. There were difficulties sometimes with technical issues, and they had to find ways around that. And there were also difficulties sometimes from colleagues questioning as to why they would be using film, with odd remarks such as, it's not the end of term, you know. And perhaps that's a preconception we have of the use of film in schools, that sometimes it's seen as a treat or something that you would use towards the end of term for enjoyment. And I think that's something that has become much more apparent in Curriculum for Excellence, as one of the underlying principles of Curriculum for Excellence is for enjoyment and for children and young people to enjoy what they're studying. And if the use of moving image can do that, then I think we really need to consider it quite seriously. So I think it's something that we really need to consider, how we can use moving image education into our daily practice in a way that's creative, stimulating, interesting for both ourselves as practitioners and for pupils. And I've asked David if he can post on to the website some details of how you can get into websites and so on that will help you find materials that will suit. And in September last year at the Learning Festival, there was a launch of screening shorts. And that has been a very useful resource for a lot of people who want to use moving image, and I would highly recommend it. The other website that I think you should connect with is Creative Scotland. Scottish Screen had a lot of the resources that were used before, and that has now been amalgamated with other areas into a website and area called Creative Scotland. And you'll get lots of details there as to materials that you can use, how Creative Scotland are bringing areas of the arts together, moving image, film production, looking at dance, music, all sorts of things, to get us to think about how we can offer a creative arts curriculum for pupils. So that's something that some of you might want to tap into. The thing that I really enjoyed working with my students was the fact that they were really enthusiastic about what they were doing, and they found that over the sets of placements that they had, they could try ideas out initially, learn from what worked and what didn't work, come back, share with each other lots of ideas that they tried, and then go out in their second major placement and put some of these ideas into practice. And there was a great deal of pleasure got from the pupils and the students in delivering this, and I think it's something that perhaps as practitioners we really need to seriously consider using a bit more. So I'm now open to sort of comments. I could chunter on here quite a lot about moving image because I'm quite enthusiastic about it, and I haven't mentioned an awful lot about film analysis, which I could do, but I'm more interested in what people are interested in. So if there are any questions or comments from anybody out there, I'm happy to hear them and perhaps respond to them. So I'm happy to hand back to John and David at this point, and you can let me know if there have been any responses.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Sandra. That is a fairly sort of thorough introduction to moving image, and I mean, as a
primary teacher myself, I think it's quite exciting, but also slightly makes me slightly nervous. You're talking a lot about things I've done, mostly like moving image creation by children. And from the sort of, I suppose, the ICT end of the spectrum, rather than thinking about analysis of film. And when you say analysis of film, that immediately makes me quite nervous, because if I go to the movies with somebody, I'll usually come out and they say, "Do you enjoy it?" And I'll say, "Yes." And then I'll listen to my wife or my daughter give me a rundown on various interesting points about it. So I feel quite, you know, nervous about moving into, say, working with children to analyse or look at film. And I think, although I was really pleased when you picked up the sort of the parallels to genre and teaching literacy, and I now can see, oh right, that'd be a good attack for me to go in that way, because I've done that in literacy. I think I'm still quite nervous about the whole moving from the written word to analysing the moving image.
I think what you've said there, John, is actually very, very key to our worries about analysis and what that involves. And I would suggest there are two aspects to this. One is to do with analysis from a director's point of view. You know, why have they taken particular shots? Why have they put a particular set of sequences together? And that's more from a technical point of view. And perhaps for those practitioners who've done a bit of making films and encouraging their pupils to make films, that might be quite a nice place to start, because they'll have to have had given some consideration to those aspects when they were making their own movies. So to me, that makes a nice connection with looking at film analysis from the technical point of view. And I think there has been a particular focus on making film, because a lot of the contacts we've had, either through local authorities or media units and so on, have been where people have come out and helped us make movies, but not necessarily the analysis. But I think more importantly, we need to think about analysis from the other point of view, which is really analysing what is film telling us, what is it saying to us, what is it, how are we reacting to certain things that we're seeing? And you can do this really quite simply, if particularly if it's something that you're not sure about. I think one of the ways to do it is to just do it quite simply. And you can go onto YouTube or have a copy of something quite simply, like an advert. And I think adverts are always quite good to start with, because they're usually of a persuasive nature. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of getting people to look at an advert and see, why are the people dressed the way they are? Why are the colours used in the way they are? Why is the font in the materials that are being used for giving messages and so on the way they are? Just very simple questions about what are you seeing? And it's amazing how children and young people will actually come up with quite intuitive answers, and they'll begin to feed off each other and begin to say, well, I think they're using red because it's a very bold colour and they want to attract attention. And somebody will say, yes, but red also means danger, and is there a significance in that? Is there a danger? And they really begin to start to analyse almost quite easily, intuitively, whereas adults are think are a bit more reticent, in that it's open to all sorts of interpretations. And I suppose it depends how comfortable you are with that. I'm not particularly comfortable in that it's not my forte, and I'm sometimes hesitant in putting a commentary about a picture and what I see in that picture, because I'm not sure if it's the right way of seeing it. Whereas young people don't have those hesitations. They see it as they see it, and they're quite happy to debate it.
So we can actually...
So I think if you start off, and screening shots will give you lots of different kinds of things. Yes?
Sorry, I think we've lost a wee bit of audio there. Are you there, Sandra, okay?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that sounds really lovely, because it'd be much easier for me to say to children and take my cue from them than to try and start this is the way we do it, is to just open it up. And I suppose, again, it is their field, because even a 10-year-old has probably watched an awful lot of moving image compared to the amount I've done over my life. It's a predominant media they look at. When I was their age, I suppose I occasionally saw the television and spent most of the day with my nose in a book. And now they're spending their time watching movie image all the time, and will have, hopefully, some sort of intuitive understanding. David?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right, John. And the fact that the bulk of their information is received by moving image, either through television or watching videos or, DVDs now, games, playing games on the computer, iPads, iPhones and so on. Excuse me. And I think we really need to tap in what youngsters know about now. And it's up to us to move into their world and think about how they're receiving that information.
Sandra, it's David Noble here. Just got a couple of questions at this point. We've had people on the show before who have talked about multiple literacies and digital literacies, and I wasn't that surprised. You know, in Graham Donaldson's report, he tends to focus on the kind of singular definition, or even not really defining what we mean by literacy or literacies. So is that something that you've looked into, maybe spreading it or widening the definition, or are we just talking about core literacy skills here when we talk about moving in image education? And just a second question, looking at the kind of definitions, is it worth creating a distinction between moving image education and educational or teaching using moving images?
To answer the first one, I think we have to be very, very open to literacy being seen as covering a much wider set of aspects than earlier. I think I have had my horizons broadened in that this year I've joined the literacy team for the final year for the BEd, and I'm working with colleagues who are embedded in literacy and looking, and I've had my eyes opened at being much broader in my thinking about it. For example, graphic novels was something that I was vaguely aware of but didn't know an awful lot about, and it's how you can tell a story through what we would possibly term cartoon type pictures and books, where the information is given in much shorter bits, but a lot of it comes from the pictures and so on. And it's a fantastic way of including pupils where their written and reading skills are not as strong as some of their peers, and it allows them to engage in all sorts of materials, from Shakespeare to quite sort of modern Roald Dahl type stuff. And also the fact that another conference I was at recently, where a media person was talking about how certain aspects of graphic novels, i.e. in the way that they're laid out. For example, if we look at a cartoon and we look at balloons and it's a speech bubble that comes direct from the character, we know that the character's actually saying that. Whereas if it's a series of circles, we know that the character's actually thinking that. The same sort of idea is used in graphic novels, where circles and squares and so on will be used in order to demonstrate whether this is direct interaction between characters or whether it's background information, foregrounding certain things and so on. And that also connects very clearly with film analysis, in that there's a particular vocabulary linked. There's a type of film language And I think we need to discuss that. I think we as practitioners need to be aware of that language and start to get to grips with what that language is, what the vocabulary is, and how we can engage youngsters in a common vocabulary where we all understand what we mean. It's a bit like this LOL in messaging, you know, the laugh out loud bit and stuff. That there's a vocabulary that youngsters are using that to a certain extent is excluding a lot of us as practitioners, because we are not engaging in the same levels that they are. And I think it's our duty as practitioners to break into that and see literacy as a much, much broader spectrum than I think Donaldson alludes to. And I think in that way we could truly see that we are moving our ideas about inclusion and opening it to young people and children whose literacy skills in the more traditional way are not quite as strong, and allowing them to come into that literacy comfort zone where they feel comfortable in their own way, because they're able to demonstrate their understanding of literacy in a way that's not written down, or in a way where they're not having to read out information. So I think from that point of view, I think it's important. I think from the second point of view, sorry, David, could you just reiterate again that second point about what you said about education?
Yeah, I was just wondering whether there's a distinction to be made between moving image education and education or teaching using moving images.
I think that's a very interesting question. I don't know if I know the answers to it, but I know exactly the point that you're making. I think I would be advocating that we think about moving image education as a core aspect of literacy within Curriculum for Excellence, in that it has cross-curricular approaches that can support both secondary, primary, nursery. I think at its broadest, it can be seen as something that's embedded in our young people without them understanding and realising that it's embedded. I think if we take the narrower view where we can use moving education as a tool, and I think it's a really strong purpose there, and I mentioned that earlier on, where you can use it as a prompt or an introduction and so on, would tend to narrow it down to specific uses, and I think that's a shame. I think we need to look at moving image education in its much broader way, so that we can be creative, but also tapping into what our youngsters are talking about and how they're communicating with each other. Okay?
Yeah, that's super, Sandra. So, I mean, I quite like the idea of a staged approach to these things and sort of dipping my toes in. And as I say, I'm most used to dipping my toes in the making end rather than the understanding end. But I suppose if you started with using moving image resources more in classroom, and it's becoming easier and easier to get these things in our classrooms, and then you can begin to dip your toe carefully into the language of film, as opposed to just talking about the content. That would maybe be a way for people to be able to start using this stuff without having to feel too nervous about reading up on film history or whatever.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think one of the things that schools might want to consider is that a lot of schools now have teaching and learning communities. And first year, they're probably beginning to wind to an end. But for next session, what some might want to consider examining moving image education. And rather than doing that as a whole community, if you're a particularly big school, you might want to have three or four colleagues get together and have a focus on that, try out ideas, look at some of the materials that's written there. If you go into Learning and Teaching website, Learning Teaching Scotland, you'll find stuff on moving image and ideas that people have used already. And that would be a way of perhaps trialling out ideas, sharing ideas, people maybe already using some materials from websites and not necessarily have talked much about it. One of the things that has reminded me of is when I was at the running festival in Glasgow this year, and I have to say the standard of the festival was very, very high, and I got a huge amount of, out of it, and it would be great if colleagues who don't always get the opportunity to go can maybe have a rotation in their school, which is something we used to do when I was a teacher, so that people get an opportunity to go. But lots of information on the website. However, one of the things I went to see was a group of youngsters, and I forget where they were from, but they were first years, I think. Yes, I'm sure they were first years, who were making up their own games, and for computer games. And they were having to write a storyboard, and they were having to think about the kind of dialogue they were using, and they were having to think about backgrounds and characters, and it was like making a movie, but in a different way. They were having to put this together as a computer programme, and obviously, if the person who is interacting with the programme makes particular choices, then they had to have leads and avenues in which, if you made a particular choice, you went down that route and went through certain doors and so on. Whereas if you made another choice, it led you outside a building and so on. So it became really quite complex, the different avenues that the youngsters had to think about because of the choices that people would make. And they also had to think about learning from the mistakes. For example, at one point they had a dog following the main character of this game, and for some reason, the way they had programmed it, they could never get rid of the dog, and the dog became very irritating for them. So it was one of the things that they took on board as a learning curve. You know, if you're going to take certain actions, it may have consequences. So you've got to think about how you build up your program, and you know, if you want to make changes, how easy are those changes going to be made, and so on. So again, I think if you look at moving image education back to David's point, in its much broader sense, you can easily keep making up computer programs, computer games and things in that moving image education, because it has moving images and people interact with them. So, yeah, I think it's open to all sorts of interpretation. And it depends whether you've got really good ICT people. Kids are really good at this, but quite a lot of the GLOW mentors are very good ICT. And again, teaching them learning communities might be a way of contacting each other and saying, oh gosh, I'm quite good at doing this, or I don't know an awful lot about this, but can you help me with that? And I think it's where colleagues can really work together to think about moving out of their comfort zone and having a go at something that they're, you know, that's new to them with a bit more confidence. So that might be an idea.
Sandra, you've mentioned about how some of your postgraduate or undergraduate courses revamped. It might be interesting before we finish to find out the impact of the Donaldson report and the recommendations and the work of the National Partnership Group has impacted on these programmes. But sticking with MIE at the moment, do you have examples presently of where students have introduced new pedagogies or approaches using moving image education, or perhaps it's too soon to highlight things that you found of particular interest?
Yes and no. You're right, it's a bit early. I was a little bit concerned about running this elective in that my own knowledge is not particularly strong from the point of view. It's kind of a new adventure for me. But I was so inspired by what I saw at the Learning Festival, and the fact that I have had contact with Scottish Screen in the past, and some of my colleagues have been involved in Moving Image for a wee while here, that I really wanted to give it a go. And what I said to my students was, you know, this new website has been launched. Let's try and approach this from A, a pilot study, and B, let's be a teaching and learning community in our own right. So what I said to the students was, we're going to learn together. I will take a lead in starting us off and providing as much information as I can, but you as students can then take the lead as this goes on. It was done over 7 inputs of 2 hours at a time, and I set up the first two, and that the first one was all about the Screening Shots website, looking at some films, doing some film analysis and so on, and getting people interested in where they could get ideas. And the second one was Gary Swan from the media unit in Aberdeenshire came out and spoke to the students for the second session and gave them a whole load of contacts and websites and so on, went through some of the sort of major ones saying, if you're into doing, you know, graphic novels, look at this. If you're into filmmaking, look at this. If you're into film analysis, look at that, and so on. And that was really useful. And then the students went off into practice, came back with another two sessions, then they came back and they had another two sessions, with the final one being presentations excuse me, on what they'd learned over those six early sessions. So a lot of the information we've got at the moment is anecdotal, plans that people put together that they just shared with each other. I've got feedback that I did through questionnaires and so on, which I'm hoping to put together to give some sort of justification for repeating the elective, because it was so positively responded to, and perhaps get a paper out of that to see, you know, to try and encourage people to think about moving image and bringing it into their teaching practice. So although I don't have anything concrete at the moment, I'm hoping to build that up, and I think I've got enough justification from both what I've done with this group of students and the response I've had from the lectures that I've done, that people have come up to me afterwards and I've tried that in my classroom and found it was very, you know, the kids really enjoyed it. And certainly when I was out on my visits this time, I saw a lot of students using moving image more as a tool rather than from the analysis point of view. But I think that's perhaps where we start, you know, get people interested in using it, and then they can move on from there. So, yeah, and I think there is some impact in Donaldson, and if you want to continue on that vein, I'm quite happy to give you some information as to where we are in Aberdeen on that.
It seems interesting that you know, we're moving into a new era, perhaps, where, you know, professional inquiry is going to become more of an expectation for individual teachers or teacher learning communities, and possibly within the context of changing literacies, MIE is going to be maybe a fertile area for practitioners or groups of practitioners to conduct inquiry into, you know, new pedagogies or, you know, maybe nothing, maybe not quite as grand as that, but using using resources that are out there, such as some of these moving image banks and materials and such like that you've spoken about.
Yes, I think that's right, David, and I think it's also changing the understanding of some of our colleagues where moving image is seen in a different way. It's not seen as a pedagogical approach. It's not seen as a useful tool, and that actually it has a place in our classrooms now, and I think we need to have debates and discussions about that. And I think that it's a real opportunity now, as you've suggested, for some sort of professional inquiry, and that can be done quite informally to begin with. In the way that I started in it, that I thought I really need to be able to say to the programme director for some of these programmes that I've been lecturing on and offering this kind of study on, that I can justify offering it again, because students do have an interest in it and they gain a lot from it. And I think one way of doing it is through the teaching and learning communities, because I think it can be daunting for a teacher, unless they've got a specific reason they're undertaking some sort of postgraduate study, or they've been given a commission by school or local authority, for example, like the Angus, the Brechin project, to be involved in that kind of thing. It's a bit daunting to try that on your own, particularly even if you've got some skills, it's quite difficult. Whereas I think teaching and learning communities, or where a group of teachers are interested in looking at something like this, where they begin to quite informally share what their knowledge is and trying to take notes and sort of cognizance of where they are and trying to capture that in some sort of way, and then try out ideas and then try to measure any impact that might have. And that can be quite tricky, and it's a bit like trial and error, because one of the things that emerged in a recent conference we had here in Aberdeen with STEC was how do you measure impact, and where is the impact? Is it on the practitioner and the way they teach and how they adapt their teaching? Is it on the pupil? Is it both? How do you measure it when it's often to do with attitudes and attributes as opposed to actually physically producing data? In maths, you're going to produce answers to things, so it's much more easy to work out whether your teaching has an impact. Whereas quite often now in social research, people might grow in confidence because of some sort of support mechanism you've put in. But that change in their confidence can be quite difficult to gauge. And how much have they moved in confidence? And for some people, that might be quite a small move. And for others, it might be huge. It's a bit like those youngsters where if they have a physical disability, to be able to take a couple of steps, it's a huge move for them. Whereas for a more able-bodied students, being able to run round a field under a certain time might be a huge step for them. So it's understanding what a significant learning impact for our pupils and how we measure that, how we demonstrate that, and should we have to demonstrate everything. I think there's a lot of discussion to be had around that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Sandra. But I know we're just coming into the last 5 minutes or so of this evening's show. If you've got any comments or questions for Sandra, then you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. That's edutalkr. Or if you're on Twitter, if you include the hashtag edutalk. I'm sure John will want to come in. Just a wee question, Sandra, kind of putting you in the spot here. I get a sense that, and I could be completely wrong, that ICT or ICT-related courses or units within initial teacher education, and I would imagine as an extension postgraduate or post-qualification education, is still fairly marginalised or marginal, in that, is it the case that these ICT type units are only available as electives, and that new entrants to the profession can possibly still go right through their training, so to speak, without having to get up to speed or challenge their practices or emerging practices in relation to embracing technologies?
Certainly from Aberdeen's point of view, ICT is embedded into our B.Ed course. I'm not sure, I have to say, from the year course, in that I'm not familiar enough with that course, but I'm certainly confident in being able to say that our four-year course students certainly have sessions on ICT embedded as part of their course, and there is an expectation for them to demonstrate a certain level of competence in ICT skills. And we do things like looking at using cameras in a variety of ways, both for taking still images, these flip cameras, for making videos using the flip cameras, to being comfortable with using interactive whiteboards. And in fact, often the feedback from placement is that teachers have really enjoyed having a student, because it's allowed them to do things with the interactive whiteboard that they never knew they would be able to do. And that's because the students' competence has been good. But we also offer electives where if students are particularly keen on ICT, either or where they see it as a strength and they would like to be able to offer that as a strength within their schools, then it is an option as an elective, but it's certainly pretty strongly embedded in our programmes, and there will certainly be a continuation of that from the undergraduate or the PGD year point of view, and I'm sure there is some engagement, but I don't know the level of that. From a postgraduate point of view, I have to say that there's an expectation for any student who comes on to do any certificate, diploma or masters, that they would A, have equipment that would be pretty up to date in order to be able to get into websites like MyAberdeen where all the materials are, to be able to do Skype virtual classrooms, you know, to be able to have audio and visual. But there would be no particular ICT courses, as far as I know, related to our postgraduate spectrum that students could undertake or would be expected to undertake. There is an understanding that they would bring certain skills with them before they started. Okay.
That sounds good. It's changed quite a lot since the long time ago that I was at did the PGC. A couple of things you said there were really interesting to me, Sandra. The first was this idea of assessing how useful moving image education is. And the way you've talked about it, with the links into literacy, the links into ICT, all the different links into all sorts of things, that would seem like almost impossible to me to truly evaluate. Because it just should, if it's done, I wouldn't say properly, but engagingly, it would have effects in literacy. Ordinary literacy, it'll pass over to that, it'll pass over to the creative arts, it'll pass over to all sorts of things, technology and all the rest of it. So that makes it particularly difficult, I would think, to assess.
Yeah, I see your point of view. I would be inclined to say that it gives us really good assessment opportunities if you think out of the traditional box. Yeah. For example, one of the things that you can do is, with the computer games, for example, the pupils that were involved in that, they can take screenshots of their games and put it into their portfolio packs. And I think there's a real understanding now that pupils would be putting together personal portfolios of evidence to chart their progress through the beginning of their primary and or their secondary education, and where I think I'm hoping that as part of assessments, as assessments mature, there will be opportunities for pupils to be able to put in some of these materials, DVDs and screenshots and so on, and taped pieces or captured on some sort of audio way, either through computers and so on, or tape recordings, where instead of everything being written down, that it allows pupils where they're not particularly articulate in a written way to demonstrate that actually they have very strong literacy skills, just not always in the traditional way. And I think employers would be very interested in that, because if you look at, and it's down to things like The Apprentice and Alan Sugar, you know, where people can prove themselves as being very adept and very literate, but not in that traditional written way. And I think it allows us as practitioners to give children the opportunity to demonstrate their literary skills in totally new and exciting ways. And I think that's where it holds a significance for me, because I think we're beginning to break out of this box of saying, well, things have got to be done like that. Well, no, they don't, and we really need to rethink that.
Yeah.
And give it's a way of sharing ownership with the youngsters.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Sandra, because it's assessment by evidence and hopefully by sort of conversation rather than by counting the dots or ticks and crosses.
Absolutely.
That's super. I think we've actually slightly run over our time, and David's going to wrap up in a wee minute. It's been fascinating for me because I'm just starting to think about these areas in my own work, and I say mostly from the creating end, but now thinking about how can we pull in the analysis and all the other stuff. So I've certainly really appreciate what you've been saying this afternoon, Sandra. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John, and I'm genuinely interested in how you do move from that working with film in the making of film into the idea of analysis. So I'd love to hear how you get on with your pupils.
And Sandra, I'd just like to reiterate what John said as well. It's been fantastic to have you on the show this evening. I mean, just to finish up, it would be interesting, again, kind of looking at the context of your work, if you'd like to maybe say something about your involvement with STEC. You've mentioned STEC a couple of times during the show, and possibly some listeners won't be aware of the work of the group. And maybe also say a bit about how things are changing for you in post Donaldson report, and you know, we get the sense that since the National Partnership Group came together to take forward the Donaldson report, maybe the most tangible changes. So it'd be great to hear what's been happening for you recently.
Okay, do stop me if I run over, but I'll maybe try and cover those areas as succinctly as I can. STEC is an organisation, it's the Scottish Teacher Education Committee, where all seven schools of education, the universities that have schools, meet together on a regular basis, and it's chaired by one of the professors in Stirling, Richard Edwards. And I've kind of been on the periphery of STEC since it started a few years ago, either producing posters or workshops or attending. But this year I had a greater involvement in that there's a conference, an annual conference put on, and we in Aberdeen were the hosts. And I was asked if I would represent the university as Aberdeen's representative on the National Committee. And we met fairly regularly in Edinburgh as a committee to decide how we wanted to shape the conference and so on. And the title was Teachers as Lifelong Learners this year. And we had a very interesting conference, and we're about to upload most of the last materials onto our School of Education website. So if anybody wants to look or is interested in the work of STEC, certainly from what we did in the conference, I suggest you go onto the University of Aberdeen School of Education website and look at conferences. As I say, some of it's just being uploaded this week and the beginning of next. So within the next week to 10 days, you might want to have a look at that. So that's really what STEC is about. I've been recently contacted by STEC and by the, I can just find the right bit of paper, by the Graham Logan, the lead inspector for teacher education, in consultation with STEC, with where we feel we can help as programme directors for Charter Teacher to help formulate ideas of moving forward with postgraduate study and CPD for teachers. And I've literally in the throes of responding, putting back a response. The questions that they've asked are about what were the successful elements and so on. And basically what I'm saying is that the wealth of written evidence we have in assignments and work-based projects and so on is very good evidence of the engagement that Charter Teachers have had with postgraduate study, and that the high standards that have been produced by such students, because they had a standard, the Charter Teacher standard, to aim for, and the fact that there's actually quite a lot of stuff that we can use for moving us forward into postgraduate studies for the future, and the fact that the General Teaching Council are very keen for us to retain quite a lot of the postgraduate materials that are within Charter Teacher programmes throughout the schools of education, because they felt that it was extremely strong and gave teachers who didn't necessarily want to go into management an opportunity to lead learning of pupils, of colleagues and so on. And just to kind of wrap that up, we as a school have been looking quite intensively at our postgraduate spectrum and what we would like to offer students, and that's still being debated quite strongly, and we're having links with the STEC conference, because the national partnership discussions were held in the afternoon in the form of round table. The fact that we're responding to Graham Logan, the fact that we've had a summit here as well, so we're trying to pull everything together. And what we will have is our current array of specialist programmes, for example, autism, inclusive practice, guidance and pastoral care with one in mindfulness and so on. We'll still be offering that. And we're hoping to offer an advanced professional studies and postgraduate master's where people can have choices that are more tailored to their context, their interests and so on. And we have already in situ the enhanced professional practice for early career teachers, and that's where we encourage our students and other students from other universities to consider doing postgraduate study from the minute they start in the probationary year, and also whether we want to do something in accomplished teaching. And you, David, you and I were both involved in the meetings at General Teaching Council about that. So we're still discussing a lot about how we want to move that forward, but we're feeling comfortable with the time frame at the moment on that.
Okay, thanks very much for that update, Sandra. Hopefully it's of interest to listeners. But we'll wrap up there, and thanks again, Sandra, for excellent input on Moving Image Education. And if you wish to listen to Sandra's audio again, or if you want to pass the word on to colleagues, then the audio, the archived audio, will be up at edutalk.cc, website edutalk.cc, later on this week. If you're listening to the live stream, you might be interested that at 8 p.m. this evening we're going to have an education phone-in featuring Seanach McKinnon of the BBC in a personal capacity. She's going to be hosting the phone-in, and it will be featuring in our virtual studio Neil Winton, who's a teacher in Central Scotland, and Ian Stewart, teacher at Ailey High. If you're not listening to live stream, then you'll have missed the phone-in, and our next show therefore will be on Wednesday the 23rd of May, where Katrina Oates, be well known to many people within Scottish education, will be reflecting on her master's dissertation that she's just completed. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to John and Sandra for joining me this evening, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Good night.